Good afternoon to you. Now, Pentecost is tomorrow. And as we know, as Gilbert said, the Holy Spirit was given to his people on the day of Pentecost. Today, the topic of the sermon, if you can't tell already, is called Rivers of Living Water. Now, I don't have a little clicker, so I'm going to have to say next or do this. So if you could go to the next, that would be awesome. So if you look at John 7, verse 37, Christ said, and here's a statement that he stood and he cried, and he said to the people, he said, if anybody thirsts, let him come to me and drink. And he who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. But this he spoke concerning the Spirit, who those believing in him would receive. So when Christ said this, he said, there's a certain rivers of living water that will flow out from you or flow out from people. And a lot of times when he spoke these things, the people didn't understand what he was saying. And if you look at the Bible, this concept, rivers of living water, is woven throughout it. And it's quite descriptive of a number of things. And Christ here was speaking specifically about the Spirit of God. And what we'll see is, as we tour through this, is that there are a couple of dimensions to this. First that we'll go through is we'll look in the Bible, rivers of living water, and how it's talked about in different places. More on a physical level, because you'll see that the rivers of living water have to do with the millennium and the world tomorrow and things that are on their way. And then we will cover it from a spiritual perspective of what he means by this very thing. So we'll go to the next slide and we'll start. Let's turn back to Revelation 22 and verse 1. And what we'll see is this is one of the places where it talks about the river of life or living, a river that is living. So Revelation 22 verse 1 is when John was brought to the throne of God, and it says, and he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and the Lamb. In the middle of the street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, and each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. And what we find is that there is a river that is described that it's at the throne of God. It says there is an actual pure river. This one is so pure, and if you look and actually see some rivers, you know, you've seen pictures of like vacations and Maldives and Bora Bora and all these places where you see this incredible water. And a lot of times you just see like a beautiful, you know, clear blue water. It's just amazing pictures when you see that type of thing. Well, the water at the throne is even better, or whatever you want to call it. It's crystal clear. Have you ever been to a lake before? I know we have, like when we go on the men's hike sometimes, you walk up to a lake and it's pretty deep, but it's calm and it's pretty clear and you can see down, you know, 20, 30 feet type of thing. Very, very clean and clear waters. Well, the one that's coming out of the throne of God is described as crystal clear, like a crystal, very like just see-through, crystal clear water that comes out of the throne of God. So while we see blue, beautiful, kind of clear water today, when we see that water that's out of the throne one day, it's going to be even more amazing. Let's continue on with the actual description. So if we look at Ezekiel 47, let's turn over to Ezekiel 47, because this is another description of the same type of things. You'll see in the Bible that it's multiple places that God will describe some of the same things. Ezekiel 47, verse 1, is talking about the temple, which is, you know, the God's throne. It says, he took me and brought me to the back, to the door of the temple, and there was water flowing from under the threshold of the temple towards the east, for the front of the temple faced east, and the water was flowing from under the right side of the temple south to the altar. And he brought me out by the way of the north gate and led me around on the outside to the outer gateway that faces east, and there was water running out on the right side. So he starts inside the temple, says, look, there's water coming out under the threshold from the front, and he went around the side and he saw the water coming out of the side of the temple, basically. So if we go to the next slide, continue on Ezekiel 47, verse 3. It says, then when the man went out to the east with the line in his hand, so he's got a measuring stick, he measured 1,000 cubits and he brought me through the waters. And the water came up to my ankles. And again, he measured 1,000 and brought me through the waters. And the water came up to my knees. And he measured 1,000 and brought me through the water. And the water came up to my waist. And then again, he measured 1,000 and it was a river that I could not cross. And he said to me, son of man, have you seen this? In verse 16, and then he brought me to return me to the bank of the river. And when I returned, there along the bank of the river were very many trees on either side, one on the other. So if you listen to this description of what it's describing, it's the same thing that was talked about in Revelation, where you have it coming out of the throne of the temple out, and it gets, in this case, it adds some more depth because it gets bigger and wider and deeper. And then there were the trees on either side of the river. So if we look at this one right here, if we advance the slide, we'll see the idea roughly is that coming out from the threshold on one side, in fact, it's actually flipped around backwards. It's coming out from the east side, the water is, that when he said he did the first measurement of 1,000 cubits, which is roughly 0.6 kilometers, not quite a kilometer, that from that point to that point was ankle-deep water. And then another 1,000 cubits, or another 0.6 or so kilometers, that's knee-deep. And then another 1,000 is waist-deep, and then after that he said it's too deep, right? It just kind of got to be a raging river that, you know, he could not cross, too big, too wide, too deep type of a thing. So when we look at the description there, we have this river that starts out, and it starts really small, inside the temple, coming out from underneath, and then it turns and goes deeper, gets bigger, gets wider, gets to be a roaring, raging river, is how this river of living water is described. Now, aligned on either side of the banks of this river are, it's described as of trees, and we'll see what those are in just a bit. But if we look at the temple and the description that's there, this is describing the throne of God, and this is also describing something that will also take place one day when Christ does come back to the earth. Now, if we look at this concept, you know, there's the mighty Amazon River. This is a picture of the mighty Amazon River from way up in space. But it finds the origin. You know, there's a very small origin of this. There's little trickles of water that emerge from frozen ground in South America, and then they flow down the mountain. And then one stream that starts here and another stream that starts here, etc., they kind of all combine together until it turns into the huge, massive flowing river. Right, and this thing, you know, picks up a lot of speed, momentum, and power. And if you look at it, it flows for 3,600 miles before it reaches the Atlantic Ocean. And when all of this water, which starts at the tiniest little thing, goes to a roaring river, it hits the ocean at the rate of about 1.4 million gallons every second. Right, so here's this fresh water hitting the salt water at 1.4 million gallons every second. Such force that it pushes all the fresh water some 60 miles out into the ocean. You can kind of see some of that. If you look at it as it spills out into the ocean, you know, picture some of the soot and silt and, you know, the dirt and things like that. But the Amazon River is a kind of example of that, where it actually starts, like as we see the river of life starts small and then turns and bigger, wider, faster, stronger to what's massively big, pushing its way out into the ocean. We see this in certain rivers today. The Amazon is a good example of that one right there. So let's turn to Ezekiel 47. Because it describes it a little bit more, 47 verse 6 through 8. And it says, "Then he said to me, the water flows towards the eastern region and goes down into the valley and enters the sea. When it reaches the sea, its waters are healed." So the place that we're talking about when we look at where this is talking about is in Jerusalem. And if you look at Jerusalem, you can see in the middle there is the Dead Sea. And basically to the left of that, if you were to trace your finger near the top or three quarters right at the top, is Jerusalem there on the left-hand side. So when it says that it starts there and it starts to trickle or go down eastward, it means it would go from Jerusalem down east to where the Dead Sea is. And it says when it reaches the sea, then the waters are healed, is the description. Now, if we look at this, if we change the slide, I don't know how many of you have ever seen the Dead Sea. How many people have been in the Dead Sea before? Okay. You've kind of done this where it's, you know, so full of salt that you can sit and float in it. Well, it's kind of a cool trick. This guy's just sitting in the water, right, floating and reading something, and everybody takes the picture like this, right, because it's one of the most unique places where you can do that type of thing. But if you look at the actual waters themselves, they're so dense and so full of salt that there's nothing really that's living inside of these waters. So if we go to the next slide, too, we'll see, you know, there's so much salt, you can see it just kind of collect up on the sides in different locations. In fact, if we go to the next slide, too, there is, you know, people will actually go out and shovel this or harvest it or, you know, pull a lot of the salt in. But this sea, it's appropriately named the Dead Sea because it's dead, right? And it's so full of salt, there's not things that are thriving that are actually living in there. So what happens going forward? Let's turn to Zechariah 14 and go to the next slide. Zechariah 14, verse 4 says, in that day his feet, so this is talking about in that day when Christ returns, will stand on the Mount of Olives, and we know where that is, which faces Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall be split in two, from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move towards the north and half to the south. And the day shall be that, and down in verse 8, it said, in that day it shall be that living water shall flow from Jerusalem, half of them towards the eastern sea and half of them towards the western sea. In both summer and winter it shall occur. So something changes when Christ comes back, is that the Mount of Olives gets split, like it says, there's a valley. Then all of a sudden there is water that flows from the place where there's not water flowing from today. That starts to go east and it starts to go west. So what does that look like? Let's go to the next slide and we'll see back to the same kind of a picture. If we take Jerusalem again, up there, top of the Dead Sea to the left, and if we say it flows from the east, if you are flowing water that's starting there to the east, that would flow down and it would hit the Dead Sea. And if we were to flow to the west, that would flow down and hit what other sea would that hit? Right? It would flow basically to the Mediterranean ocean. So what we have is we have a new change in landscape, an event that's happening is that Christ comes back, the mountain splits and water starts flowing. And what it says happens is when this water starts flowing is that it starts to heal. It starts to heal the waters. And the Dead Sea then will no longer be the Dead Sea. So if you need to get a picture in floating, now's the time to do it before Christ comes back. But that will start to be healed. And then that will start to thrive. Now, not only that, but we also have a lot of, you know, pollution and other things that are in the rest of the oceans of the world. And so what we find is there is a central source to where water that's healing will start flowing and start to mix in with all the other polluted. And if we think about this, what happens before Christ returns? There are so many events, things that are happening today, radioactive waste and other things. But by the time Christ returns in the second trumpets there, we're going to have one third of every living thing in the sea is going to be dead, right? By the time the third trumpet concludes, one third of the, you know, Earth's freshwater supplies will be poisoned. With the second plague, you're going to have the rest of the seas and salt water, and the bodies will die and become dead with blood color, and creatures die in it. And then the rest of the freshwater in Revelation 16 become dead and bloody. So what we have, like before, when we look at the Great Tribulation leading up to time Christ returns, is you're going to have a lot of that trumpets and plagues and things that are poured out to where there are a lot of dead animals, fish, waters, blood. It's going to be a really bad, gory scene. And so when we have Christ coming back and fresh water start to flowing and start to heal, it's not just the toxic stuff we do today. It's going to be cleaning up and healing the stuff that happens preceding his return too. So, but what we find is this fresh water source starts here. If we go to the next slide, we see something written in Joel 3, verse 18, talking about the same day again. It says, it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drip with new wine, the hills shall flow with milk, and all the brooks of Judah shall be flooded with water. Right, where they're dried up and they're not today, they'll be flooded, and a fountain shall flow from the house of the Lord and the water, the valley of Acacias. So what we're going to see is they're going to start to bloom, and this earth is going to start to bloom because of this rivers of living water that's there. We go to the next slide. Let's turn to back to Ezekiel 47, verse 9. Ezekiel 47 talks about the effects of when this starts flowing. It says, and it shall be that every living thing that moves, wherever the rivers go, will live. Remember, everything's dead. Everything's bloody, rotten. Now it's going to be living. There will be a very great multitude of fish because these waters go there, for they will be healed, and everything will live wherever that river goes. And it shall be that fishermen will stand by it, from Engedi to Engleim, and they will be places for spreading their nets. And their fish will be of the same kinds as the fish of the great sea, exceedingly many. So we start to see the earth, when this is taking place, physically get replenished, and fish, crazy amounts of fish, and fishermen throwing their nets in and pulling out tons and tons and tons. It's going to be a really interesting or an amazing time of healing. And it all starts with this rivers of living water that comes out of the throne of God. People will know the source. Who is this? Where does this come from? It comes from, you know, his throne and where he is. Let's keep going in Ezekiel. Turn to the next slide. Ezekiel 47, verse 12. It says, along the banks of the river, on this side and that, will grow all kinds of trees for food. Their leaves will not wither, and their fruit will not fail. They will bear fruit every month, because their water flows from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food, and their leaves for medicine. So it's an interesting picture here, too. Not only is the stuff in the water living, but the stuff beside it is living. And these fruit trees here are quite interesting, too, because they're a little bit different. They're not really normal. You know, a lot of times trees will fruit once, could be twice a year. This says, no, these will bear fruit every month. If you think about it, this is a tree that's fruiting all the time. Every single month, they're going to have a fruits that come out of this tree. It's going to be that's how much living and healing is in this water that's coming from the throne, that the trees are going to fruit unnaturally a whole bunch. And people will come and eat the food, and then the leaves they'll use and be healed, and the medicine. And again, they'll know where this comes from. And we talk about this. So, you know, we'll see that the world, this is quite an amazing picture. If we go to the next slide, you know, we all know that today that if we ask the question, does the world need healing? I mean, there's a resounding yes to that. There's a resounding yes to healing in so many ways. There was so much sickness. There was so much poverty. There's so much, you know, all types of things that go on with people that this will be a fascinating time that people will be able to see and know and be able to just go there and pick from the fruit and eat and be healed. And you're going to have this incredible time of living in life that takes place. It's quite an amazing picture. But if we look at our world today, it's so desperate need of this type of healing. You know, I don't know about you, but to me, when it pains me to see children suffering in any way. You know, there's a lot of children that suffer today from malnutrition, from abuse, from a lot of things. And to me, that's one of the things I'm most looking forward to seeing righted in the world tomorrow, is those who are helpless like that just to be given a chance and not the suffering. So this is an amazing river. This is an amazing event. This is an amazing time that physically the world is going to start to be healed from all the destruction, devastation, things that have taken place, and people and nations and trees and things will just grow and thrive. So it's going to be an amazing time. Now, let's shift gears a little bit, and we'll go on to a spiritual tour of the same thing. So let's go to the next slide again, John 7:37. We read this before, so I won't reread the entire thing. But he said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. And when he said that, we know physically there will be that, and from the throne there will be that. But he also is speaking concerning the Spirit of God. His Spirit of God. And there's a key verse up there, a word at the top. It says, if anybody thirsts, if anybody thirsts, let him come to me and drink. And out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. So he's talking about the Spirit of God. So what does it mean to thirst? So let's go through next slide. And actually, we'll go to the next one. Matthew 5, verse 6. And let's talk about this idea of thirsting. Because the Bible talks about this, and it's not just a, hey, I'm thirsty, as in it's hot out, and I am in Texas, and it's, you know, 4,000 degrees humidity, and there's huge bugs that bite you all over the place. It's not that type of a thirst. This is talking about something else. Because when we look at the way this is phrased, it says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for what? Righteousness. That's a spiritual, a relationship. There's a conduct. There's a things that are not about physical food that are being discussed here. It says, blessed are those who thirst after this, because these are the ones that will be filled. These are the ones that will be filled. When we look at the human condition today, I don't think we see a lot of people hungering and thirsting after righteousness in the slightest way. In fact, there's hungering and thirsting after every single thing you possibly be besides righteousness. And what do we see the world? Are people filled and satisfied or not? There might be temporary things like that. But let's see what the world even says. Let's go to the next slide. There is something that we know. This is called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And this is a theory about our human condition that psychologically that this is how we feel fulfilled and at peace or filled or not thirsty. And the idea behind this is that at the bottom, you know, there's basic needs like physical needs, food, clothing, shelter, and things like that. You need that taken care of. Then you need security. You need to know you're safe, protected, not always living in fear. Then you need to be part of a group. Then you need to have recognition and status, and, you know, you are achieving things till you get to a place where you're self-actualized. You are finally, now that you've got all these basic things in place, that you're actually self-actualized, right? And so this is the idea psychologically of how the world kind of views it, that there's certain things like this that's called a hierarchy of needs, and once these are fulfilled, it's kind of like the Star Trek Next Generation idea, where there's this perfect kind of everything's put together and everybody's, you know, got things taken care of and security, and they're polite and, you know, contributing, and it's this perfect utopian type of a world is what is needed to be taking care of your needs. Well, this hierarchy of needs actually was changed a little bit recently. So they updated this recently based on, if we go to the next slide, modern needs. There's actually a more fundamental need on this, I think, and it's Wi-Fi, wherever we are. All right, so let's go to the next slide. So if we look at this hierarchy of needs, this is what the world says we need. But let's go to the next slide. If you look at this, is this really true? Because, man, if we look at the world, how many underweight children are there today? If you look at the red spots, you know, those who do not have enough food in this world, 29%, you know, if you look at Africa, that's a crazy amount of people. And more than 1.02 billion people go hungry. You know, you and I have so much here. There's a lot of people on this world, 1.2 billion out of almost seven now, people that do not have enough to eat. Now, according to Maslow, they are, that's the bottom rung, right? So they are not ever going to be at peace according to that hierarchy of needs. And if we start to think about this, that whole idea breaks down a bit, because the Bible is talking about, hey, you will not hunger or thirst. There is a quenching of things that takes place on a different dimension. Today, we don't even have basic needs met. And Maslow says you're never going to get to the place where you're self-actualized. You're never going to be fulfilled. You're never going to be happy or at peace or at rest, because you don't have enough food to eat in this world. And it's a flawed model if you start to think about it, because, you know, Paul said in a lot of places, you know, he's satisfied with whatever condition he's in. He's at peace. Okay, there's a satisfaction which runs against Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which says, I'm shipwrecked. I don't have any clothes. I am hungry. But he says, yet I'm content. So when Christ talks about being not thirsting or not hungering, it's talking about like that. Contrary to the hierarchy of needs of Maslow, it is saying you can have or not have some of those things, yet you can be filled. So it's talking about this on a deeply spiritual, emotional, mental level, that we're talking about being fulfilled is what it is. Now, the world is going to offer us many different substitutions for this. For your longing to be fulfilled and to be at peace and at rest and to not thirst, there's all kinds of substitutions out there for you. Drugs. Alcohol is a huge one today. Just kind of deaden it all out and just I'm out there. A lot of stimulation today, right? You know, we have so many video games and TVs and internet and this, that you could spend all Pinterest, you could spend all day long on this stuff and never have to stop and think. It almost just keeps you busy. They're substitutions for a deep down satisfying longing. And, you know, there's a lot of self-help books out there, self-help concepts that give you some nice things, but they're not deep. And there's cotton candy religion. You know, the idea that it's just you eat it, oh, it tastes so good, but man, then you want to throw up because it's so, it just does not satisfy. And then even further past that, this world will attempt to trap you in addictions. All kinds of alcohol, drugs, pornography, things like that to keep you to a place where you keep coming back for more. So the world is going to offer you substitutes to try to fill these gaps or these holes or these emptiness and these things inside of you. So we have to ask the question, if we go to the next slide, we have to ask the question, are we today, do you think we are restless or at peace in this world? Does this world, would you describe it as what Christ said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, so they shall be filled? Or does this world thirst? You know, what is this world full of? And I think if we see, there's just a huge amount of angst, as I was talking about before, even with the shootings that take place. There's a huge amount of not being at rest or at peace, but being restless. And alcohol and drugs and just nonstop things that keep people going, but never satisfying them. And this is where the world is. And Christ says, if you thirst, I have something for you. I have something for you. If we go to the next slide, here's a good litmus test for us. I always read this scripture and it sounded odd, but it's actually, if you think about this, emotionally and spiritually, it's quite interesting. It says in Proverbs 27, verse 7, it says, a satisfied soul loathes the honeycomb. So, a satisfied soul, if you think about a soul, that is something that's deep down. That's talking about the inside, the emotional, the person. That's not necessarily a physical term. That's talking about if you're not satisfied mentally, emotionally. But this saying, if you are satisfied, you loathe even the sweetest stuff. You're like, you know what? Because if you think about this, what if people aren't satisfied? What do? They end up doing a lot of things. They either end up eating a lot or drinking a lot or something because they're not at peace, right? They're not at rest. And so this is the deep thirst when we talk about the Spirit and the rivers of living water. Christ says what he can quench. But it also says to a hungry soul. So again, the soul, the type of person, the inside of you, how you think, feel, and all those type of things. Every bitter thing is sweet. So when you're the hungry soul, when you're hungry and thirsting, this means you latch on or could latch on to every bitter thing. Taste sweet. Every bitter thing that happens in life, things that happen to you, is your nickname Bitter Betty or Bitter Bob? You know, is every little thing that takes place in life something you just feed on, constantly talking about, constantly chewing on? Right? So when we talk about this, this is when Christ says, I can affect your soul to where you are satisfied. Even sweet stuff, when it comes along, you'll be like, hey, I don't need it. I am at peace. Right? This is a good litmus test. What are you crave? How do you crave? Is it, you know, which one of the sides of these things are you more on? Because every bitter thing that happens in life or somebody does to you or the things you want to latch onto, you'll latch onto because you are not at peace or at rest. So an interesting idea here that when you are at peace, you even don't have to worry about the sweet things of life. You don't have to feed on them. You don't have to overdo those type of things. So it's quite an interesting concept that Christ is talking about. And if we go to the next slide then, what we find with all of this, so to kind of sum some of this up, is your deep down thirst. So you, are you at peace or are you restless? And if you latch on to all kinds of things and you aren't inside, we'll come here. You and I come here a lot of times and we'll put on a great face for each other, right? It's easy to do. Come and say, hey, I'm happy to see you. But deep down, what are you really feeling about some of these things? We have to realize that the thirst and the needs are a spiritual matter because Christ is saying, I can quench that deep down thirst. They're created by God. Only God can deeply fulfill them. This is, you know, the reason we have this. Is so that we can have a deep relationship with him. You and I are not going to have a relationship with God based on, okay, you do this, yes, I did that. A very head logic of memorizing laws and commands and doing it. God is saying that the deep quenched thirst that you have deep down, I can help quench that for you. That is, your heart's involved too. You can't have a relationship that's a real relationship unless you also have your heart there. And God is saying that he can quench these thirsts deep down. This does not mean, when I say this, doesn't mean that, hey, we're an island by ourselves and the only way, you know, we don't have people around, the only way that we get our needs fulfilled is by God. Because a lot of times, but you look to God and you have a relationship with God. And a lot of times God will use people around you, but you know where your relationship is and where you ask. I've had plenty of times where, you know, on a physical human level, lonely, beat down, you know, just at the end of the rope, and you pray to God about this, and you didn't all of a sudden not feel lonely, but, you know, over the next couple of weeks, all of a sudden somebody comes into your life and becomes a friend, and they're a unique person, and maybe they're funny, like this happened to us a couple of times, just funny, and all of a sudden you start laughing in life, and you look back and you go, oh, you know, that was a need, and I asked God for it, and he brought somebody along. This is how it works, but you rely on God for these things, and God works that out for you. And by his Spirit, he brings you into these things, and also so we can have a real meaningful, deep relationship with him. That's real, not just in our heads, but with what goes on in our heart, what goes on in life in these type of things. So we see this time and time again. You see David did this. He was greatly distressed. He went away at a battle. He came back, and their whole village was ransacked, and their wives and everybody was taken. Everybody was going to stone him, right? And he was distraught. He's like, what have I done? And the thing that he said that he did is instead of just, you know, getting mad and all this stuff, he went and he strengthened himself in the Lord. He submitted that. He strengthened himself in the midst of being stoned almost by everybody. And guess what? And he asked God, and God said, no, I'll deliver them back. Don't worry. And, you know, when it works like that, when the emotion is taken to God and God says, no, I'll sort it out. It wasn't like, yep, your wives are taken, but just get over it. It was, I'll do this victory for you. And God brought them all back, and none of them were killed. None of them were injured or harmed or anything like that. And so we see this time and time again that God can deeply help us with the deep down thirst, the restlessness, and those other things that we may encounter in life. Let's go to the next slide, Isaiah 55, verse 1. The world, again, in stark contrast, is going to offer you something that substitutes. And it says here, ho, I love that, ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. Right? Here we go, waters again. And you who have no money, come, buy and eat. Yes, come, buy wine, milk without money and without price. So this is, again, not physical, spiritual. Thirsting and hunger. And then verse 2 says, why do you spend money for that which is not bread? And your wages for that which does not satisfy. Listen carefully to me and eat what is good and let your soul delight itself in abundance. The world's going to make you spend your time on things that might give you some satisfaction. But it's like something you're buying with your time, money, and effort that's not bread. It's not satisfying. You'll keep coming back. And he says, nope, listen to me carefully. Because when you eat of me, not only do I quench that thirst, but your soul will delight itself in abundance. And this is not just physical, hey, you're going to make money. This means abundant feeling, life at peace, just abundance of living in life. And this is so true. When God's in the picture and the stuff he gives, I mean, there's some blessings that I've gotten recently that I'm blown away by. I'm flabbergasted by it because nothing is deserving in them. And I just think, wow, that is a really, really nice life that I, you know, just given in abundance. And a lot of things just taken care of. And you just think, wow, that could not be any other way except for a blessing. And it's satisfying. It's deeply satisfying in so many ways. And this is how God works. And so we'll go to the next slide. John, just to wrap this section of John 6:35, says, Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. So we're talking about bread, which is not bread. Christ is saying, I'm the bread of life. Life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. And he who believes in me shall never thirst. Okay, he's talking on a spiritual, emotional, you know, level that you're never going to hunger, you're never going to thirst that way. So, let's keep going. So, go to the next slide. One of the other phrases that Christ said in that scripture was, out of the heart will flow rivers of living water. If we go to the next slide, John 4, verse 14 says, John 4, verse 14 says, but the water that I shall give him will become unto him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. So again, we have this picture of water and starting as a fountain, but springing up into a huge thing in eternal life. And as we read before, you know, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. So the picture here is quite interesting, too, because let's talk about God's spirit that he gives us. Because again and again, when he's talking about the Spirit, he's talking about a river flowing, living life, giving life, getting bigger, going out. And this is the word picture. If we go to the next slide, what's the opposite of that? What's the opposite of a flowing river? Would be, you know, puddle of water there with mosquitoes in it. You know, water in a bottle. Just, you know, keeping it all to yourself kind of a picture. And this is where Satan wants to keep you. In this world, frustrated, angry, unjust things happening to you, overworked, tired, constantly busy, you know, overstimulated, too many trials, hardships, irritations, always licking your wounds, always bitter, you know, getting angry at everything, holed up, closed off. You know why? Because that's a stagnant pool. That's why. Like when you're there, you're closed off. I'm not saying things aren't real. I'm not saying life isn't real and doesn't punch you in the gut. But when you stay there, that's a stagnant pool. And the picture that God has for his Holy Spirit is not that. Is not us holed up. Is not us just inward. It's not a stagnant pool. But it's a flowing river that starts like this. And then it gets deeper and deeper and wider and bigger. And things grow and all around it. That's the picture. That's why it's called a rivers of living water. But a lot of times we get caught up in this world. So if we look at Mark 4, verse 18, Mark 4, verse 18, all the cares of this world. I won't read all this because we've read this before. But the cares of this world choke out the word and it becomes unfruitful. That is, when it's choking out, the terminology there is what it sounds like. If you ever see a MMA fight where they're fighting and somebody grabs them by the neck and chokes the wind till they pass out, that's what it means. Same word picture. He's got you by the neck till you're choked out. You pass out, basically. You've got nothing left. You're not doing anything. So the cares of this world want to do that to us. All the things of this world want to do that. But when it's on good ground, what happens is, the good ground, what did it describe that person? It's not just, hey, you know, they got it and they went about their business. It says they bore fruit 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold, right? What it, 30 times, 60 times, 100 times? What does that look like? Let's go to the next slide. If you go back and look at the river that we looked at before, the ratio that is there is roughly this. But the picture of description, whenever it comes to God's spirit and growth and things, is kind of looks like this, right? So 30 times is, you know, the ankle, double that, you got 60. Double it again, you're way into the too deep part. But if you look at the shape of that formula, the exponentialness of it, it looks like what the river looks like too. It starts here and multiplies out. And God describes this a lot of times. You know, you see other ratios that he describes in the Bible, but it's all very much like starting small and expanding out from here to outward. And this is an important concept to understand about God's spirit, because it is not a stagnant pool. And a lot of times the way we treat life and things is a stagnant pool. We don't do anything. We stay where we are with our own little groups, our own little things, and our own little whatever it is constantly. And we never just look out and start expanding where that river flows way out. It's a stagnant pool. It stops right here. And the picture God gives us is not that. It goes out and life comes and it exponentially gets bigger and fruit is multiplied along the banks of the river 100 times when you get way out there. And he's like, man, this is a river that's too deep. I can't cross it. This is the picture of God's spirit, not a stagnant pool just right here, right in front of your nose and right around your group and the same thing over and over. That is not what the picture is. So if we go to the next slide, a key thing to remember here. If you feel stuck, tired, fearful, this is where you're at in life, and you only want to retreat, and that's where you are. You know, maybe that's the time to ask God for strength by His Spirit and reach out beyond you. Start a river flowing. Start it flowing. That'll help you get unstuck. Okay? Start it away from you. Expand it out. Other things, other people, not the same old group you talk to, not the same old conversations, not the same thing. Go out. The river that comes from God's throne goes and heals a lot. And by the time it spreads out, it's all over the place. Sometimes we're the stagnant pool. So the idea here is we're not going to figure some of these things out. Life may beat you down, but there's a time where you can just prime that river and start it flowing. And that is a really good thing to where you will become unstuck. It naturally happens that way. So if we look at that... The flowing of a river that flows out is the picture Christ gave. That flows out deeper, bigger, and has more impact as it goes, not just a stagnant pool. Let's just look at a couple other things as we come to the back end of this. So we go to the next one. Let's look at the physical and spiritual healing that is described. So if we go to the next slide in Revelation 22, verse 2, it says, in the middle of the street on either side, the river was the tree of life. It bore 12 fruits in trees, yielding its fruit every month. So we talked about this before, the healing of the nations. So, yes, there's going to be physical healing, but let's go to the next slide because Ezekiel tells us even more. That Ezekiel 36, verse 24, describes this time period where captivity happened and he brought them out. He says, I'll take you from among the nations, gather you out of the countries and bring you into your own land, and then I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you shall be clean. And I will cleanse you from all your filthiness and from all your idols. And I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you, as Gilbert was talking about in the sermonette. I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. So again, we have cleaning of water. We have God's spirit that's given. The healing that takes place here is going to be spiritual and mental and emotional. with the nations. So not only physical, we're going to have people that have a whole bunch of issues. And we see it today, like I said, people shooting people, just disconnected. There's a lot of things that people need help with. And this will be a healing balm to them, that a new heart, and they will be sprinkled clean, and they will learn to be healed. And if we go to the next slide, if we look at the idea that the tree produces its fruit in it every season, that's also in Psalms 1:3. This is a song we used to sing, right? Blessed and happy, I think this is part of. But it says, he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. So again, it brings forth fruit in its season. Now, for you and I, natural fruit on a tree once, twice a year maybe. God, when the Spirit's attached to that, is 12 times a year, every month. This is saying that you and I bring forth the fruit in the season of it. But since God's Spirit's behind it, it will be unnatural. It's not going to be just like, hey, I'm in a winter time and I'm, oh, woe is me. And I get to the summertime and next thing you know, I'm on fire. And you know, it's just not this cyclical up and down. It's like those trees that line the river. You're going to be bearing fruit all the time. And it'll be the right fruit for the right season. There's down times, there's up times, but it's going to be continuous growth is what this is talking about. So that person is like the planted tree by the rivers of water. Same thing. You know, the same rivers of living water there. Now, one last thing to realize or to look at about this rivers of living water is the idea of fishers of men. Let's go to Jeremiah 16, verse 14. Jeremiah 16, 14, talking about the end times. It says, therefore, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, that it shall no more be said, the Lord lives who brought up the children of Israel from the land of Egypt. But the Lord lives who brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands where he had driven them. For I will bring them back into their land, which I gave to their fathers. So the time frame here, even though it's talking about Israel in the past, it's talking about the future where Israel and the nations are taken into captivity. And God says that I'm going to bring them back. I've driven them to the other lands. And I'm going to bring them back. If we go to the next slide to continue on, Jeremiah 16 and verse 16, it says, at that time when you're bringing people back, I will send for many fishermen, says the Lord, and they shall fish them. You remember when Christ was talking to his disciples, he says, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Right? Fishers of men. This was quite an interesting story here because it was, you know, Christ did things deliberately. If we go to the next slide, Luke 5, verse 4. It says, Luke 5, verse 4, it says, when he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, launch out into the deep, let down your nets for a catch. But Simon answered him, he said, Master, we have toiled all night and we have caught nothing. Right? Does this sometimes describe us? We think, look, hey, we're working. We're trying to fish, you know, men, or, you know, preach the gospel or other things, but I've toiled all night and day and I've caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I'll let down my net. He says, okay, Christ says, do it. And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish and their net was breaking, right? They cast it over and Christ said, look, no, watch. When Christ says the word to fish men, which he will say at the end time, I'm looking for some fishermen to fish men. There's not going to be a shortage of men to be fished. When I say men, men and women, just people in the world, there's not going to be a shortage of men and women. And Christ said at the bottom, this is not a physical exercise. Hey, I can give you a bunch of food and make you rich. He says, Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men. He's driving the point home. If I say the word, you're going to be catching men, catching a whole bunch. Those who need help and healing and will turn to my truth and their minds to be open. When that happens or needs to happen, Christ will just say, let your net down. And guess what? That will take place. If we go to the next slide. What we find today, there is a huge need for this concept, fishing men. You know, in the world, there's all these things that are attributed to supernatural things. And a lot of times they'll figure out that it was actually just a physical thing or something going on or some things they can't explain. But like this one in Mexico, you know, there was a statue of the Madonna, right? And it looks like it's crying tears. and so on its own, kind of this weeping statue, and it supposedly has all of these healing properties, right? You know, and so what happens when there's word of this? Today, in today's society, man, there are thousands of people that go to this statue just to try and see it and touch it. Why? Because there's a deep need inside that they recognize. They need healing, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, all those things. And they're looking for it. They want it. When you see something like this, that's a supernatural thing happening, man, people flock. People flock to it. They just come from all over the place. Right? So let's turn back to Ezekiel 47, verse 9, with this in mind. You remember we read before, it says, there shall be that every living thing that moves where the river goes will live. There'll be a very great multitude of fish. Because where the waters go, they will be healed. In verse 10, it says, it should be that fishermen will stand by it from Engedi, and there will be places for spreading their nets, and the fish will be of the same kinds as the fish of the great sea, exceedingly many. So, the physical side, yes, but think of this on the spiritual way. At this point in time, you just have to go stand by this river where the leaves are and where the people are flocking to. And there are going to be a great multitude of, quote unquote, when they say fish men, this is kind of also what this is talking about. You will spiritually fish men. There's going to be no shortage of that. There's going to be so many people gather around here. It says fishermen will stand by it, spreading their nets, and there'll be exceedingly many. This will be a time where there's going to be exceedingly many fish flowing because of what's happening with this rivers of living water and what it offers, not just from a physical, but then you're going to be there for the spiritual to talk to people and to tell them, you know, you can be healed, you can be at peace, you can have an abundant life that's the right one, and it will be just a smorgasbord of being able to talk to people. God will bring them there. So it's like Christ saying, hey, look, just throw your net over here, and guess what? Boom. That's all it's going to take. So it's going to be an amazing time if you think about this rivers of living water in a spiritual sense in the world tomorrow. It's going to be a really, really amazing time. So we've kind of done a super fast whirlwind blow through tour of that. If we go to the next slide, this is the conclusion. Actually, let's go to the next slide and just we'll go back to the main scripture that we read before. So Christ said, again, we come full circle. When we think about this tomorrow, Pentecost, God giving his spirit, what that spirit and when him coming back will physically do to this world, as the mountains split in two and water goes out and heals the seas and the oceans and things start to live in massive amounts of trees and life and plants and fish. On a physical level, you're going to see these things there. And on a spiritual level, you're going to have deeply satisfying. You're going to have trees and leaves and fruit that the people will come flock to. There's a supernatural. There's a thing that's healing. There's something they're looking for in life that they will be able to find there. And then as you and I stand there and be fishers of men, this whole idea of just a tiny little bit of water coming out from under the throne of God turns into this. So when we think about God's Spirit, when we think about when Christ says this, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. And he who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Talking about the spirit we're given that is pictured tomorrow. That is what flows out of us. So let us, as we think about this, not be a stagnant pool. Let us think of what that means to be a river of living water.